Public feedback closes today on the hate speech reforms. The government says it's proposing to strengthen protections against speech that incites hatred and discrimination. But since announcing the plans, there have been concerns that people can no longer ridicule boomers, Karens, or even politicians. Now, the government has been accused of failing to explain what they are trying to do, while opponents of the legislation have been accused of fear-mongering. Joining me now is Jonathan Ayling from the Free Speech Union and media barrister Stephen Price. Kia ora to you both.
Morena.
Jonathan, I'll start with you. You have launched a pretty strong submission here, 10-page submission. What is the crux of your concerns about this legislation? Do you want it gone, or do you just want it reformed?
Well, the basic opposition that we have to this is that hate is a subjective notion that is virtually impossible to define. And we have seen other jurisdictions around the world attempt to legislate against hate, but ultimately that's not the solution to this problem. Now, look, we don't deny that there is hateful speech in this nation, and that hateful speech causes considerable harm. We just don't think that it's a logical step to go from there and then jump to the state intervening in our conversations, intervening in our opinion, to try and control
that. Okay, quickly before I come to Stephen to respond to that, I just want an answer to that question. Are you saying we don't need any change at all to the legislation, or you would be happy with this if it was reformed in a way, pared back?
Based on the feedback we've had, the government needs to trash these proposals.
Okay, Stephen, is it correct that it's impossible to define hate?
Look, I think Jonathan's made good points. Yes, those are problems with law, and it is a nebulous concept. But I think we don't want to go overboard here, because as the Royal Commission said when it recommended using hatred as the kind of touchstone here, this is making it harder to prove than the existing law that we've got. And this is an existing law that's been around for 40 or 50 years and relates to racial hate speech and has been used all at once, maybe twice in the whole period. So in terms of actually interfering with our opinions and conversations, it just strikes me as extremely unlikely.
Well, how does it make it harder? Because when this was rolled out, there was obviously the word insult was used in the language, in the legislation, and that's obviously prompted people to worry about whether they can insult somebody and be in trouble. So just explain to us how, in your view, this could potentially raise the bar.
Well, at the moment, the criminal provision that relates to racial hate speech includes things like bringing a group into ridicule or contempt. Now, that will be stripped away. So the Royal Commission said those are also nebulous concepts, and they could be quite low-level ones. Ridicule, you know, that could touch a lot of things. So let's take those out. And in that sense, the new law that they're proposing, which would apply not just to race but to other groups as well, would be harder to prove.
Jonathan, how then does New Zealand address the issues raised by the Royal Commission in terms of crime and hate speech, hate crime?
Well, I guess I would want to address that in two ways. Primarily, it's a little bit disingenuous for the government to lay these changes at the foot of the Royal Commission. Certainly, the Royal Commission did suggest amendments to our hate speech legislation. However, the Labour government has been talking about this for a number of years now and actually went to the 2020 election with this as a manifesto issue. The Human Rights Commission have been advocating for this since 2017. Royal Commission didn't come out until last November. So it's a little bit disingenuous to say that this has just come about because the Royal Commission has suggested it. But more broadly, I would rather that we call on our leaders to raise the tone of debate, and we call out people who spurt vile, bigoted vitriol. There's no disputing that actually we need to raise the tone of the conversation. But when we get the government involved, when we call on them to legislate against it, we will actually put perverse incentives in place. And what I'm mostly concerned about here, Corin, is that not that there will be a whole raft of cases brought before the courts, but we will begin to self-regulate. We will go, is that across the line? Is that not across the line? And we already do this to an extent with just the concept of political correctness. But this will carry the whole weight of criminal law behind it now.
Okay.
I don't think we will have people locked up endlessly, but we will have people silencing themselves.
Okay, just finally, last word to you, Stephen. The process around this, has it been flawed? Not properly explained? Not enough time for people to consider it?
Well, I don't think the debate has been very good, and I imagine Jonathan would agree about that. But I come back to the point that my colleague Eddie Clark makes, which is that we've got a pastor, it's actually happening in New Zealand at the moment, saying that he's got no problem with gay people being married as long as they get a bullet in the head as soon as they kiss. something as shocking as that and as public as that, I mean, I think that should be criminal. And if it should be criminal...
Is that not already criminal?
No.
Is that not a threat for violence?
Well, it's a threat not to any particular person.
All right.
It's not criminalised. The police have actually made the decision not to prosecute him for that.
OK, Stephen Price, interesting point. Jonathan Ayling, also some interesting thoughts there from the Free Speech Union. This debate is going to carry on. We'll have another dabble at it, no doubt.